Caribou Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Vietnam, an interview, a live performance and book release event on Saturday, August 9th, 6 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1034 Southwest 13th Avenue in Portland. The presentation will feature live original music, music videos, dramatic readings, and a discussion with the producers. That's Vietnam, an interview, in commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the Tonkin Gulf Resolution, Saturday, August 9th, 6 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Interested in solar power? In saving the planet and money on your electricity bill? In creating millions of good jobs? Celebrate the just-completed solar power electricity installation at the Musicians Union Hall on Sunday, August 17th, from 3 to 7 p.m. You'll have a chance to see the rooftop solar unit. Learn about how you can do it on your home or business. There will be food, children's games, displays, and lots of music from the likes of Dave Rovix. Again, that's Sunday, August 17th, from 3 to 7 p.m. at the Musicians Union Hall, 320 Northeast 20th in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Again,
sun is on my face, solar panels in place, catching solar rays.
What does it mean to be called crazy in a crazy world? Listen to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health, sponsored by peer-run support communities, Freedom Center, The Icarus Project, and Portland Hearing Voices. Madness Radio can be heard on FM stations on the Pacifica Radio Network and is online at kboo.fm/madnessradio. Welcome to Madness Radio. This is your host, Will Hall. Today, my guest is Karina Håkansson. Karina is the founder and director of the Family Care Foundation, which for more than 25 years in Sweden has been providing an alternative to the medical model, working with people with extreme life problems, including that might be diagnosed with psychosis. So welcome to Madness Radio, Karina Håkansson.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you. And I think some of our listeners may have seen the very inspiring film that Daniel Mackler did called Healing Homes, which is a documentary about the Family Care Foundation. And your work is starting to get more recognized and known internationally. And I think it really needs to be, because this is a very, very important example of providing an alternative to mainstream psychiatric care, an alternative to helping people who are in distress, you know, working in a very, very different way. Can you tell us what it is that's different about the Family Care Foundation, and how did you develop the idea to start it more than 25 years ago?
I think what is most different is probably that we are actually working outside psychiatry. I mean, we are not very much at all influenced by the psychiatric system or the kind of language used there. So that, to start with, I think it is different. This is every time very difficult to explain how come it turned out to be the Family Care Foundation, because in a way I would like to describe it that it just felt impossible for me to work in the system where I tried to be before starting the foundation.
What was so difficult about working in the more traditional psychiatric system?
For example, when I worked in a psychiatric ward, the way people were treated, people who came there, those we call patients or clients, I remember several times thinking to myself that if I had been here in a serious crisis, I would have been as crazy as many of the people behaved, or how to say, when coming there. And it was a very individual focus also. It was as if the person coming to the psychiatric ward became a patient, nearly directly entering the door, so to speak, as if there were no other parts of that person, as if she or he had no other life to relate to, or how to say it. I have also, from my own family, my father was for many years, not every day in a psychiatric hospital, but he was on and off a patient, and the way he was treated also made a very strong impact on me. He was prescribed a lot of medication, and he just got worse by the medication. And it wasn't until he found a psychotherapist who helped him to get off the medication, but also to try to make some sense of the things which had tortured him for many years, but also some other medication. And the more he got, the worse it went. And also to see how my father, he became a patient at the hospital. It was as if he wasn't also a father for four children and a husband for for his wife, and a dear friend to lots of friends. He also worked at times, but it was as if all of that disappeared when he entered the psychiatric hospital.
And then tell us about the Family Care Foundation. What are the homes that you create? How do you work with people?
The idea from the beginning, and that is still the idea, is we collaborate with family homes, as we call it. And a family home is a kind of a foster home, you could say. They are not trained professional helpers. They are not psychotherapists or social workers. Also, they are people who make their living in another way. Many of them live on the countryside. Some people, as for example, I know Daniel says in the movie that most of the family homes are farmers, but actually they are not any longer. When we started 25 years ago, it was like that, but it's not like that anymore, because the farmers are not so many in Sweden anymore.
So it's really borrowing a foster care model, where you bring someone who's experiencing some kind of very difficult life struggle or distress, or something that might be called an emotional crisis or a psychiatric crisis, and then you place them into an ordinary home, and then you provide support. And how exactly is that set up for people?
Let's say that you come to us to stay in a family home. You live in the family home, and during that time, two therapists in our organization will support you and the people around you. I mean, your biological family or friends or whatever, but also the family home where you stay. And one of us will be, how can I say, especially for you, as your therapist, and the other one will be especially for the family home. And we call that person the family home's supervisor. I'm not so comfortable anymore always to talk about the supervisor for the family home, because many of our family homes are nowadays so, how can I say, experienced and wise in many ways. So sometimes it feels so weird to say that some of our very new therapists supervise the family home.
Because some of the family homes have been doing this work for many, many years, and many people have come through and lived with them over time. So they learn, they develop incredible skills and ability to work with people.
Yes. So in many ways, you could also say that the family home supervise the therapist.
So it's a very collaborative, approach.
Yes, it is.
And you had said before that more than 500 people have gone through this foster home model?
Yeah, it must be something like that now. I mean, Lena, one of my colleagues, she's a coordinator in our organization. She has all the figures and statistics, and so she knows better than I know about that, but something like that, yes.
And what have the results been? Are you able to help people, and are these people who might not be really helped by traditional care, is that right?
Yeah, most people coming to us, they have been in many, many places before coming to us.
So these are considered like the most difficult, or the most treatment resistant, or the ones who are really stuck, or that no one wants to work with, in a sense.
Yeah, nearly all the people coming to us nowadays, they do have some kind of psychiatric diagnosis. All this autism and ADHD and bipolar, especially with young people also. Not all of them, I must say, not all of them. But many people who come to us, they are defined as we have tried nearly everything, the social worker or the person from psychiatry says, and now we ask you, do you think that you can do something more?
So this is more than just an alternative model. This is an approach that's helping the people that even mainstream psychiatry says that it can't work with often.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh yeah. Many people who have come to our place, defined nearly as hopeless, have shown absolutely not to be hopeless. So that is true.
And these are people who were diagnosed with schizophrenia or borderline personality disorder or paranoia or any of these things. And some of them also have criminal and violence backgrounds. So these are kind of the ones that we think of as the most scary in the stereotypes of the bad, scary mental patient. Those are the people that you work with often.
Yes. Yeah. Some of them, absolutely, or more than some of them. But I mean, there are also other people not having that heavy diagnosis but as I say, no one come to our organization if they don't have very complex life difficulties.
So this is a very different approach than the model that we typically see of people going into group homes or being in hospitals or being involved in agencies. This is about putting people into a family like a foster home, and then providing support for both the individual and also for the foster family. And is it effective? I mean, have you been able to help people?
Yes, we have been supportive to very many people over the years. If we hadn't been that, I am absolutely sure that I wouldn't had continued to work with this, because that would have felt crazy to do. But to tell you some stories, yes, I can tell you stories about people coming to us. I'm thinking about one woman, for example. When she came to us, she was diagnosed with schizophrenia. She hadn't been able to, how can I say, have a, so to speak, normal conversation with anyone for the last 5 years or so. After a preparation period, as we call it, it's 4 or 5 weeks while we in different ways prepare for the connection between the one who is about to move into the family home and the family home, and also people in their network. She moved to the family home and she stayed there for a couple of years.
And when you say she couldn't have an ordinary conversation, how was she relating to people, or what was she doing that was unusual that ended up giving her this diagnosis?
She was just screaming. She just screamed and talked in the beginning, I was her therapist, and in the beginning it made no sense at all. After some time, maybe half a year or so, maybe a little longer, it started to make sense to me. And at the same time, it also came to a kind of connection between her and the people where she stayed in the family home. And as we also meet regularly, because we always do, the family home and their supervisor, so to speak, and the one who lives in the family home and the therapist, we have regularly meetings with each other.
If you're just tuning in, this is Madness Radio, and our guest today is Carina Håkansson. She's the director and founder of the Family Care Foundation in Sweden, which for more than 25 years has been providing an alternative to the medical model for working with people who are experiencing extreme life problems, including who might be diagnosed with psychosis. What did her screaming and her nonsense speech, in a sense, what did it mean? What did you discover that it meant for her?
She was extremely hurt in her life, as many people are who come to our place.
So she was a trauma survivor. She was a survivor of abuse or violence or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what do you think it was that helped her to slowly start to be able to be understood? What was it that living in the family home context provided her that she hadn't gotten before?
What comes to my mind, first of all, and that is crazy maybe to say, but that is that they kept on living their ordinary life even though she moved into their home. So they kept on their life. They, of course, they invited her in different ways, but they didn't pay that kind of attention to her. They didn't observe her, or they didn't try to analyze her. They didn't try to, to come under her skin in a way. But they kept on in their daily life, and they invited her to take part in things she wanted to take part in or was able to take part in. And this, of course, took some time, because in the beginning, I think that she was there in the house with them, but there were not so much connection. But that was okay for them, as I think. And I remember them talking to their supervisor about these things and how to make this in the best way for themselves, but also, of course, for her. And she took part in the daily work. That was a farm. And it seemed as if she found some kind of peace in the daily routines, and to meet the horses. And I also think that she said, some years later, she said that she also felt that we liked each other, those of us who were involved in the shared work. I, as her therapist, I love the family home. They are great people. And I think they love me as well. And I think that kind of, that was something she felt.
So even though she was in this very hurt place and she was only communicating by screaming and speaking in a way that people couldn't understand, there was this acceptance of her being part of that family, and she was invited to participate. And even though it took months and months and months, slowly she started to make connections.
Yeah.
It sounds so basic and common sense. You, in some ways, you provide acceptance and love and a place to be, but I think that's the challenge, that in our society, it's very, very difficult to actually create a space for someone where they can actually do that when they're in these states that would be called psychotic or altered states.
Yeah. I have met a young man today. I can't say too much because I haven't asked him for permission to talk about him. But I think I can say that I have met a young man today who lives right now in one of our family homes. And we have recently started to work together. We have just been working for some months. And he comes to me for, let's call it, therapy. And at the same time, we also used to have a little chat with a family home mother, because she used to drive him to me. It's difficult for him so far to go himself by bus or train and so such things. And I sat in my room a little while after they had left this afternoon, and I really asked myself, how come this is so far, so to speak, working? And one of the things as comes to my mind is, again, first of all, they are not afraid of him. And I think that he feels that they are not afraid. They know that he is right now a little bit crazy or a bit weird or whatever we call it. And they know about that. They know that he has experiences they have never had. Such things as, you know, these things, hearing voices and all that kind of stuff. But they don't pay too much attention about it. They know that that is a part of his life right now. And I think that he feels, or at least that he has started to feel, that they are there if he wants to say or show that right now it's very difficult for me. But besides that, they have their life, and he is a part of that life the way he manages to do. But as you know, I mean, we never know about future. How will it go and what will happen? And but if I shall trust my body feeling when meeting him and the people around him, I feel pretty sure that it's going to work.
What are some other examples of people that have come to the family homes and then had some success?
Now a story comes to my mind. It was a boy at the age of 16-something, and he had been, so to speak, client for many, many years. And also his parents, they were very much defined as a client family, and he was very defined as a hopeless one, and that his future was as if people already know that it's going to be a lot of prison and hospitals and blah, blah, blah. And some of my colleagues worked together with him and his parents and a family home who is part of our organization. And this young man, he became a man while he was living there. He stayed there for a year and a half or something like that. And when he left, his life was very, very much different from what it looked like when he came. And that is also a very strong memory I have, when, because I was invited to take part in their, we call it team meeting sometimes. And I was invited to come and to just ask some questions to the team. What did this time mean for you? And I asked this question, can you please describe something which was essential during the time you have worked together? And what I remember very special is when his father turned to the family home and he said that when I realized that there are two other grown up, that there are two other persons in this world caring for my son, sitting waiting for him to come home, then I got my hope back, he said, or something like that. We try to create an atmosphere where it is possible to be a human being with all its complexities. Do you understand what I mean?
So this is true for the professionals that are working, as well as the foster family and the people who are there to be supported.
Yes. It seems as if, so to speak, normal reactions and feelings are sick, that it would be sick to have angst or to be worried or to be sad or whatever. And that is something we, how can I say, we really try to rather accept that all of us, no matter if we are therapists or clients or family homes, we do have our good days and we do have our bad days. Instead of putting the so-called client in the corner and defining him or her behavior. And these things all together, as I think, is probably the most important. I think it's very important that people are offered psychotherapy when coming to us. I think it's important that the family home has their regular supervision time with their supervisor. I think it's important with the team meetings. But I do think what is more important than that is that people feel there is some kind of engagement. And you could even call it love, actually. Because, I mean, those we call clients, they have, of course, the same need as other people have. Need for time and need for caring and need for trust and all these things. And that is the challenge, as I think, to every day try to hold on to that knowledge in the organization and not get too too much in love with some theoretic ideas or some but because that is the challenge, really, not to forget the human life conditions that we are all a part of in a way.
You said that one of the helpful things that the family homes provide is a place where people aren't afraid of you. How do you help the family homes to not be responding with fear when someone is screaming or being very difficult?
First of all, there are, of course, family homes who get afraid. Most people get afraid for the unfamiliar, as I think. So what we try to do is, of course, to try to talk about these things. I try to very much also tell about my experiences from other people I have been working with. I also try to ask the family home if they have some kind of similar experience from their own life or some own feelings in a way where they have felt like crying or screaming, but they haven't done. Because this thing with recognizing someone or something very, very often creates less fear. That is one thing. And the other very, very concrete thing is that the family home knows that if something happens which is too difficult, too frightening, or something they really don't know how to cope with, they can phone their supervisor whenever they wish. So they can phone in the middle of the night if they want to. They can phone New Year's Eve if they want to. And that many of the family homes say that it's very, very important for them to know that they have that possibility. They very seldom do, but they have the possibility. And I mean, again, that is also a knowledge that most of us have, that if we know that there is someone there for us, we feel safer then.
One of the differences between the work of the Family Care Foundation and the traditional psychiatric approaches is the question of medication. And often in the family homes, they're reducing and coming off medication if they've been taking antipsychotics or anti-anxiety drugs or mood stabilizers. Tell us about that whole approach to medication that you have.
When we started, already then, we had an idea that we would like to be a place where people could stay without having medication. So that has been very much in our mind, or how to say it, all the time. That is a very difficult question because it's so self-evident for me not to use too much drugs and hopefully no drugs at all. So it's difficult to answer to a question, why do you do like that? Because I would like to say, why doesn't everyone do like that? It's more like that. So I also think it's absolutely necessary and important that we are a kind of role model, is that the word?
Mm-hmm.
To show that it is possible, and not just possible, but also for many people much, much better to get rid of both the diagnosis but also the medication.
Carina Håkansson, thank you so much for joining us today on Madness Radio.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to an interview with Carina Håkansson. She's the founder and director of the Family Care Foundation. She's a psychotherapist and social worker. And the Family Care Foundation, for more than 25 years in Sweden, has been offering an alternative to the medical model, helping people facing extreme life problems and difficulties, including that might become diagnosed with psychosis. That's all the time we have on Madness Radio. Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health, co-sponsored by the Icarus Project, Portland Hearing Voices, and Freedom Center. Madness Radio is hosted by Will Hall, and producer is Leah Harris. Madness Radio is based at KBOO in Oregon and can be heard on FM stations on the Pacifica Radio Network. Contact us at radio@madnessradio.net.
And it is noon. You are tuned to KBOO in Portland. And remember, if you are not a member of KBOO, please become one. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. Now, here's the noon headlines.
And now, the KBOO News at Noon for August 4th, 2014. Early this morning, Portland police took a suicidal 32-year-old man into custody. Police responded to a call from the 200 block of Southeast 106th Avenue in the Hazelwood neighborhood. The man allegedly held a rifle to his head and fired shots outside a residence. Portland Police's news release states that officers were able to convince the man to drop his weapon and lie on the ground before taking him to a local hospital for treatment. Israel is using U.S. equipment and intelligence in its offensive on Gaza, according to an NSA report leaked by Edward Snowden. The document outlines cooperation between the CIA and Israel's intelligence agency, Mossad. It also acknowledges Israel's access to NSA cryptoanalytic expertise and advanced U.S. technology and equipment. Nigerian authorities have confirmed a second case of Ebola in Africa's most populated country. The death toll from Ebola in West Africa has grown from 729 to 887 in recent days, according to the World Health Organization. While most of the newly reported deaths occurred in Liberia, there have been confirmed cases of the virus in Guinea,